Thank you, Michael. And thank you to the Belfry for having me back. It really is a privilege. This is no chore. It's just a privilege to be back here to learn more about each production before I see it, because I'm always an audience member as well as everyone else. So hello to all of you. Thanks for coming, and hello to the live at-home audience, wherever they may be. You really should be down here in person, but that's all right. It's nice that you can join us if you're not able to get out. We're going to have four very knowledgeable, informative guests here talking today. And for those of you who might just have something other to do, like getting out and enjoying the sunshine, we'll be an hour or less. Just, I know people are schedulers, so that's good to know, just in case you've never been here before. Our first guest is Peter Hinton. He is a freelance director based in Niagara-on-the-Lake. He was the artistic director for the National Arts Centre English Theatre from 2005 to 2012 and has been an associate artist at the Stratford Festival, dramaturge in residence at Playwrights Workshop Montreal, an associate artistic director at both the Canadian Stage Company and Theatre Passé Marais. He was named an Officer of the Order of Canada in 2009. Please welcome Peter Hinton. Good morning.
Good morning.
What made you excited to direct the Rez Sisters?
Oh, many things. First, it's by Thompson Highway. And Thompson Highway is one of the great original genius voices of the Canadian theater. And, you know, we have a very short history, a history of about 50, 60 years of active production of Canadian plays. And in 1986, when the Rez Sisters premiered, a voice hit the world stage like as profound as Michel Tremblay in the 60s in Quebec, as strong as any new urgent voice. And this writer is, to me, the very best of what new theater can be. It's skilled, it's crafted, it's smart, and it is constantly elusive in its tone. It has something very important to say and says it with such mastery. So the opportunity to direct this play was something I seized at.
Now, I know you won't give us any spoilers, but can you give us a brief synopsis of the play?
Yeah. You know, I'm of the Oscar Wilde school, which is when I begin reading a novel, I read the last chapter first. Because I like the journey of how they get there. And I think that's what he did. That's what Oscar Wilde did. And so I don't think I'm giving anything away. It is set in Wasageigan Hill, which is an imagined res in Northern Ontario. And it's sort of inspired by Manitoulin Island and by Wiki there. And it's about a group of women who live on that res in 1986. And they're sisters. There are six sisters and one of their sisters-in-law. And Pelagia Patchnose, who's the eldest of the sister, is bored of Wazy, their res. She's tired of it. Tired of the drinking and the messing around and the same old, same old. And she's a dream to go to Toronto. And careful what you wish for. Because lurking about the res is Nana Bush. And Nana Bush is the Ojibwe trickster figure that Thompson counters very intentionally in opposition to the Christian idea of Christ, of the eternal suffering, the eternal man who died for our sins. Nana Bush is much more mischievous than that, much more as much about anarchy and joy as he is about the confrontation of pain and experience. And Nana Bush gets in there on the wishes of these women, and they learn about the biggest bingo in the world that is happening in Toronto. And that desire for bingo allows all the women to envision their lives better than what they currently are. They all believe that if they were to win this bingo, they could improve their lives. And so one dreams of getting a new stove. One dreams of getting the biggest record player ever. Another person dreams of a toilet and getting her washroom redone. And Pelagia Pachno's dreams of the roads being paved. She's tired of dirt roads. And she wants a better community. And so it makes you think about, you know, what the things we wish for. Do you know the word wishing implies a dream that we recognize will probably never happen? Right? When I go, I wish I had $1 million. I do, but I'm not really seriously committed. It's not like I have a vocation to get $1 million. It's not as dedicated. And in the pursuit of this great wish, they encounter a bigger dream. And that's what the play's about. Yeah.
And thank you for saving the bigger dream till we go and see it. I appreciate that. Now, the play has been described as magic realism. Yeah. What is magic realism?
Well, that we could debate for a very long time. But I think one recognizes that form of magic realism where there are elements that are very realistic, very familiar, very naturalistic. And then there are other qualities that invite a subjective experience of the world, a spirit presence in the world. So in the same way that there are scenes that are about toilets and about paved roads and on a res with real things happening, there's also Nana Bush. We also, the acts of magic occur. One of the characters goes into the spirit world. So it's playing with elements of theatricality and the spirit and magic, while at the same time putting it in a context or a frame that is realistic. So it's not like a docudrama. It's not a social issue realist kind of play exploring all of the, necessary but, political injustices of living on a res. It's not just that. It has elements of that. But it's more like a myth. It's more like an allegory or a fable.
You told us about the amazing impact it had in the 1980s. What about the personal impact on you? I understand you saw the first production in Toronto in 1986.
I did. I'll never forget it in 1986 of going to see that the show. I do confess, the reason I went to the show is I was desperate. It was 1986, so I was 24 years old, and I was madly in love with the director of the play. That's why I went. I remember seeing that play, and I sort of forgot about being in love with the director because I fell in love with the play. I was knocked out. And it's one of those plays, I don't know if this ever happens to you, I had to go see it again. I saw it, I was so sort of hit in the face with it. I didn't really know what I had seen, so I had to go back to sort of process what I had seen. And I remember meeting Thompson at that time and just being just so brought into a reality of what was possible in the theater, how ambitious it is. And it has a lot of characteristics of a first big play. It's very Baroque. There's everything in the kitchen sink is in this play, like from high farce to very interior confessional monologues to fast-paced comedy, to very dreamlike, whimsical. There's a song in the middle of it. There is movement. It has everything in it. And you get this feeling of a writer discovering the stage and all it can do and using everything. Fearless. And someone in control of their craft to be able to take advantage of it. He knew what the theater could do. And right after this play, he writes a second play in what was conceived as a trilogy about Wasagic and Hill called dry lips ought to move to Kapuskasing. And in The Rez Sisters are seven women and Nana Bush, played by a male actor. And you'll see in the production, they talk a lot about the guys, their husbands, their lovers, their children. And in Dry Lips, you meet all the guys. And Nana Bush is played by a woman. As Nana Bush is very two-spirit character, isn't just in one gender, turns around. And then the third play, which has never been produced professionally in Canada, which is a shame, and I don't just mean too bad, I mean shame, is called Rose. And it brings together the men and the women. And in that play, Nana Bush takes on a war in the spirit world with the Valkyries. And in it, Pelagia Pachnos, who you meet in this play, becomes a chief, and she is assassinated in Nathan Phillips Square. It's unbelievable, unbelievable play. And it's never been done because our country's too afraid of it. And to me, I call it a shame because I think it speaks to how far we still have to go. And that third play was written in 1992-93. And it was commissioned by the Royal Manitoba Theatre Centre and Canadian Stage. And they commissioned it, they workshopped it, and they never produced it. They were too frightened. It's very graphic, it's very violent. And you see this progress in the three plays from the kind of, it's such a weird time to talk to you because we're right in the middle of teching the show and rehearsing the show. Like, it's at the most interior time in the process to come and talk to an audience. It's like terrifying. But working last night, it made me think, Michael, of Tartuffe. It's structured like Molière. The way the plot gets laid out, the way you meet characters that you recognize, the way the exposition gets laid out and the farce gets built up constantly with this deeper, richer. Is it a comedy or a tragedy? That is always up for grabs in it. Then Dry Lips is much darker. It gets much more into a realist vein, still with the magic quality. And Rose is like an opera. It is like a Wagnerian opera. And you know, what is a really interesting thing about Thompson is to really pay attention. Look at his biography, because you see it in his dramaturgy everywhere. Here's a guy who grew up in the bush of northern Manitoba on the trap line. And you feel it in his writing. It's so present in his writing. Then he goes to residential school, and you feel that. You feel that experience in him. In residential school, this innate genius for music that Thompson has is identified. And Thompson was able to go to Europe and study classical music. And when you talk to Thompson Highway, he will talk about Nana Bush, he will talk about his aunties in northern Manitoba, and then he will talk about Cozy Fantuti. And go, the references are equal in this scene.
Do you think Rose will ever be produced in your lifetime?
I don't know. I really don't know. It is amazing to me that in Canada there have been at least five professional productions of Tony Kushner's Angels in America. A huge cost for any theater to take on. It's been produced twice professionally in Toronto and was remounted again. And that's an American play. But Rose, will it ever be produced in my lifetime? Probably not.
You have made a commitment to put staging plays with First Nations themes, if I can put it that way. I mean, as artistic director for the National Arts Centre English Theatre, I understand you made a personal commitment to doing at least one work a year that honored and celebrated the First Peoples theatre culture. Why? Why was that so important to you?
Well, I thought that was my job. I was the artistic director of English theatre at the National Arts Centre of Canada. And when I arrived, it had been 16 years since there had been a work by an Aboriginal artist produced at the English Theatre, which was Dry Lips Ought to Move to Kapuskasing. So I thought that was wrong. I thought that made no sense. That would be no different than if there hadn't been a play produced by a woman in 16 years. Like, it just felt like that was what was necessary to do. And there are, it's one of the most vibrant, exciting, sexy, fun, important aspects of being Canadian, is that we have the honor of being on the land of such a divergent, passionate, strong people. It inspires me. And so I think it's an amazing thing. And that has continued. Just this past year at the National Arts Centre, where Gillian Kiley is now the artistic director, they just did a play called Huff, which is written and performed by Cliff Cardinal, Tantu's son. Isn't that amazing? Yeah. So there is such an important part of our culture and our history. Our colonial history is something I find we have great discomfort about, and is really an important thing to speak into and address.
Peter, very good to have you back here. Thank you very much for
my
doing
pleasure.
This morning.
Thank you.
Peter Hinton directs the Rez Sisters at the Belfry Theatre.